That night, Taita's dreams were complex and many-tiered. In most cases, peopled by men and women he had known, but others were strangers, yet their images were so meticulously etched that it seemed they were creatures of flesh and blood, not woven in fantasy and gossamer. The dreams were linked by the same thread. Through all of them, he was carried along by the expectation of something marvellous that was about to take place. He was searching for a fabulous treasure that was almost within his grasp. He woke in the first silver glimmer of day to a sense of elation for which he could find no reason. He left Meryn snoring and went out onto the lawns, which were pearled with dew. The sun had just gilded the cliffs. Without further thought, except to check that the periapt was still suspended from its chain around his neck, he set off for the upper gardens once more. As he entered the gardens, his sense of well-being became stronger. He did not lean upon his staff, but shouldered it, and struck out with long, determined strides. The pathway to the grotto of the imp was not obscured. When he reached it, he found the nook deserted. Once he had determined that he was alone, he quartered the ground swiftly, looking for some trace of a living being. No other person had been there. Even the ground over which his other self had walked, although damp and soft, showed no tracks of human feet. Nothing made sense. It was becoming increasingly difficult for him to trust his own sanity, and to accept the evidence of his mind and senses. The witch was leading him to the borders of madness. Gradually he became aware of music. The silvery slither of sistrums and the staccato tapping of a finger drum. He clasped the periapt tightly and turned slowly to face the mouth of the grotto, half in dread and half in defiance of what he might see. A solemn ceremonial procession issued from the mouth of the cave and paced down the moss-covered ledges. Four weird creatures bore on their shoulders a palanquin of gold and ivory. The first bearer was the ibis-headed Thoth, the god of learning. The second was Anuk, the goddess of war, magnificent in golden armour and armed with bow and arrows. The third was Heh, the god of infinity and long life, his visage green as an emerald, his eyes shining yellow. He carried the palm fronds of a million years. The last was Min, the god of virility and fertility, who wore a crown of vulture feathers. His phallus was fully erect and rose from his loins like a marble column. Upon the palanquin stood a splendid figure twice the height of any mortal man. Its skirt was cloth of gold, its bracelets and anklets were of purest gold, its breastplate was of gold, set with lapis lazuli, turquoise and carnelians, and on its head rested the double crown of Egypt, with the heads of the royal cobra and vulture at the brow. Crossed over its jewelled pectorals, the figure held the symbolic flails of power. "Hail, Pharaoh Tammuz!" Taita greeted him. "I am Taita, who eviscerated your earthly body and attended you during the 90 days of mourning. I wrapped the bandages of mummification about your corpse and laid you in your golden sarcophagus."
"I see and acknowledge you, Taita of Galala, you who were once less than Pharaoh, but who shall be mightier than any Pharaoh who has ever lived. You were Pharaoh of all Egypt, the greatest kingdom that ever was. There could never be another mightier than you. Approach the pool, Taita. Gaze into it, and see what fate awaits you." Taita stepped to the edge and looked down into the water. For a moment he swayed with vertigo. He seemed to be standing on the pinnacle of the highest mountain on earth. The oceans, deserts, and lesser mountain ranges were spread far below him. "Behold all the kingdoms of the earth," said the image of the Pharaoh. "Behold all the cities and temples, green lands, forests and pastures. Behold the mines and quarries from which slaves bring forth the precious metals and glittering stones. Behold the treasures and arsenals wherein are stored the accumulations of the ages. These shall all be yours to possess and rule." Pharaoh waved the golden flails, and the scene changed beneath Taita's gaze. Mighty armies marched across the plains. The horsetail plumes, surmounting the bronze helmets of the warriors, frothed like sea spume. The armour, the blades, and the spearheads glittered like the stars of the heavens. The war horses reared and plunged in the traces of the chariots.
The mailed tread of marching feet and the rumble of wheels shook the earth. The rear ranks of this vast array were cloaked in the dust of their advance, so it seemed there was no limit to their multitude.
"These are the armies you shall command," cried Pharaoh.
Again he waved the jeweled flails, and the scene changed again. Taita beheld a vista of all the oceans and seas. Across this mighty main sailed squadrons of warships. There were galleys and biremes with double banks of oars, their sails embellished with paintings of dragons and boars, lions, monsters, and mythical creatures. The pounding of the drums set the beat for the oarsmen, and the waters creamed and curled before the long bronze beaks of their fighting rams. The numbers of warships were so vast that they covered the oceans from horizon to far horizon.
"Behold, Taita! These are the navies you shall command. No man or nation will prevail against you. You will have power and dominion over all the earth and its peoples."
Pharaoh pointed the flails directly at him. His voice seemed to fill the air and stun the senses like the thunder of the heavens.
"These things are within your grasp, Taita of Galala."
Pharaoh stooped and with the flail touched Min's shoulder. The god's great phallus twitched.
"You shall have indefatigable virility and potency."
Then he touched the shoulder of Heh, the god of infinity and long life. He waved the palm fronds of a million years.
"You shall be blessed with youth eternal in a body whole and perfect."
Then he touched Thoth, the god of wisdom and all learning, who opened his long curved beak and uttered a harsh resounding cry.
"You shall be given the key to all wisdom, learning, and knowledge."
When Pharaoh touched the last divine figure, Anuk clashed her sword against her shield.
"You shall triumph in war and hold dominion over earth, sea, and heaven. The wealth of all nations shall be yours to command, and their peoples will bow down before you. All these are being offered to you, Taita of Galala. You have but to reach out your hand and seize them."
The golden image of Pharaoh stood tall and regarded Taita with a straight, burning gaze. Then, with solemn majesty, the bearers carried the palanquin back into the dark recesses of the grotto. The vision faded and disappeared. Taita sank down upon the grass and whispered,
"No more. I can suffer no more temptations. They are part of the great lie. But no mortal man can resist them. Against all reason, my mind longs to accept them as the truth. They arouse hunger and craving in me that will destroy my senses and deprave my eternal soul."
When at last he left the grotto and went down, he found Meron waiting for him at the garden gates.
"I tried to find you, Magus. I had a premonition that you were in danger and might need my help, but I lost my way in these jungles."
"All is well, Meron. You have no need for concern, although I value your help above all other.
The woman doctor is asking for you. I know not what she wants of you, but it is my instinct that we should not trust her too far or too deeply."
"I shall bear your advice in mind. However, good Meron, thus far she has not treated you unkindly, has she?"
"Perchance there is more to her kindness than we are aware of."